for a commercial lease have a confession of judgment clause in there?
And that basically just.
But that basically says is if they, yeah, if they breach that agreement and they vacate without your permission, not only can you, you are going to get that amount, but you're also going to be able to go to court and confess judgment on behalf of them. So you don't have to litigate the issue either.
Right, and you don't have to give them notice and an opportunity to defend.
It basically gives you all the power of a landlord that you should have as a landlord. And if you're not doing those in your commercial leases, you need to start doing those.
Dave and Janelle, I love your all-inclusive emails.
Send me your bill.
All in one spot, everything you need.
Send me the word.
Only like your life, right?
I might actually.
Yeah, just ship it. Shoot me an email and I'll tell you what you have right now. And I mean, obviously Megan can also do this as well, but she'll charge you more than I will.
You don't know that.
Oh, I know that for sure.
Oh, okay.
Oh, were you?
Yeah.
That's something I should.
I don't charge enough.
Well.
But.
I think Rich thinks we don't charge enough either.
Rich charges a lot, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
Rich has jacked his rates.
I charge less than that, but that's just.
Aliens or Mars?
I mean, that's fair. No, I mean, send me an email, send me what you have, I'll review it for free, and if I have any additions, then I'll tell you what it costs.
For the what?
That sounds good, man.
Then if you want me to look at you.
I guess it's probably a good idea that you do.
I don't care.
Yeah, I think you should, yeah.
And then send it to me and if we need to talk more about it, talk more about it. I mean, unless I see a great job here at the Texas Bar Career Center and find, you know, just move to Texas.
You're not young enough, but it's, well, it's an Android, right? I don't, but.
I will say this afternoon before I came here, on my screen, I had a California federal case, I had a Texas state case, and I had an OSHA matter in the Virgin Islands, and I had a Pennsylvania common police case. Those were the tabs that were open on my screen, and I was like, I'm so glad there's a board meeting tonight so I can just stop thinking.
Yeah.
It's too big. Actually, I don't like dogs.
Okay, the October 20th, 2021 meeting of the Derry Township Zoning Hearing Board is called to order. I want to make everyone aware that it is and has been the policy of Derry Township to record meetings for the purpose of accurate minutes, accurate notes, and posting on the township website. This meeting is being recorded for those purposes. Now let's do a roll call of members. Lindsay Drew?
Here.
Sandy Ballard?
Here.
Mike Angelo?
Here.
Dean Morgan?
Here.
And I'm here, Steve Seidel. Okay. We have several items of old business. I can read those proposed orders one at a time here, and then I will. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm trying to roll right through tonight. Thank you. So draft minutes here. I want to propose one small change that I had sent to Janelle. It was on page 3 of the minutes under the hearing in the case of Joy S. Trout. And it's a sentence that I had, I believe should read, if a compliant fence was installed on the neighbor's elevated patio, it would be even higher than the 8-foot fence Ms. Trout is proposing on her property, to replace the sentence that was there. And that's consistent with what she testified and also what was incorporated into the order I'll be reading in a minute. So I'll propose a motion to approve the minutes with that change.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay, that carries. Thank you for the reminder, Janelle. Okay, so old business. We have several items here of old business. I will read the proposed order and ask for a motion to approve that order. All right, so we'll start with adopting a decision in the case of the Lexus Group LLC, case number 2021-06. Okay. And the proposed order is dated today, October 20th, 2021. Number one, the applicant's request for a variance from section 225-304, table 7, item E, regarding the side yard setback for a principal structure is granted. The applicant may encroach to within, the applicant may encroach to within 8.5789 feet of the side property line for the existing garage. Number two, the relief herein is strictly contingent on the existing garage not being expanded, including its height, without further relief from this board. Number three, the applicant shall construct the improvements in strict compliance with the plans and specifications submitted to the board during the hearing of this matter, provided, however, that if the improvements that are the subject of this hearing as finally constructed require less relief than granted by the board herein, no additional relief from this board shall be required. Number four, except as extended by applicable law, the relief granted herein shall be valid for 1 year from the date hereof. In the event the applicant has not, within the time period provided herein, commenced operations, applied for a building permit relative to the improvements where permits are necessary, or constructed the improvements not requiring permits, the relief granted herein shall be deemed to have expired, and the applicant shall be required to comply with the then existing terms of the zoning ordinance. Number five, any violation of any condition imposed herein shall be a violation of the township zoning ordinance and shall be enforced as provided in the ordinance. I have a motion to approve that order.
So moved.
Thank you, Lindsay. A second?
Second.
Thank you, Dean. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, that motion carries. And Mike, I think
you're
abstaining on all of these.
A through D.
Because you weren't here for the last meeting. Okay, very good. All right, next case is adoption of a decision in the case of Joy S. Trout, case number 2021-07. Okay, now I'll read that one as well, proposed order. Again, dated today, October 20th, 2021. Number one, the applicant's request for a variance from section 225-407.A.1 regarding the maximum height of a fence is granted. The applicant may construct a fence that is 8 feet in height. Number two, the applicant shall construct the improvements in strict compliance with the plans and specifications submitted to the board during the hearing of this matter, provided, however, that if the improvements that are the subject of this hearing as finally constructed require less relief than granted by the board herein, no additional relief from this board shall be required. Number three, except as extended by applicable law, the relief granted herein shall be valid for 1 year from the date hereof. In the event the applicant has not, within the time period provided herein, commenced operations, applied for a building permit relative to the improvements where permits are necessary, or constructed the improvements not requiring permits, the relief granted herein shall be deemed to have expired, and the applicant shall be required to comply with the then existing terms of the zoning ordinance. Number four, any violation of any condition imposed herein shall be a violation of the township zoning ordinance and shall be enforced as provided in the ordinance. Do I have a motion to adopt that?
So moved.
Thank you. Thank you, Lindsay. Thank you, Sandy. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? And again, note that Mike is abstaining. My understanding is that the next item, adoption of a decision in the case of Brownstone Brokers LLC, case number 2021-08, that they have withdrawn their application. So we will not be acting on that tonight. Okay. Next case is adoption of a decision in the case of Lotto Station LLC, doing business as the Englewood, case number 2021-09. Okay. Again, dated today, October 20th, 2021. Number one, the applicant's request for a variance from section 225-401.4.F, table 36, regarding illumination of the canopy sign is granted. The applicant may install the interior illuminated canopy sign. The applicant, number two, the applicant shall construct the improvements in strict compliance with the plans and specifications submitted to the board during the hearing of this matter, provided, however, that if the improvements that are the subject of this hearing, as finally constructed, require less relief than granted by the board herein, no additional relief from this board shall be required. Number three, except as extended by applicable law, the relief granted herein shall be valid for 1 year from the date hereof. In the event the applicant has not, within the time period provided herein, commenced operations, applied for a building permit relative to the improvements where permits are necessary, or constructed the improvements not requiring permits, the relief granted herein shall be deemed to have expired, and the applicant shall be required to comply with the then existing terms of the zoning ordinance. Number four, any violation of any condition imposed herein shall be a violation of the township zoning ordinance and shall be enforced as provided in the ordinance. Can I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Thank you, Lindsay. Second?
Second.
Thank you, Sandy. Any discussion? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, and again, Mike is abstaining. Okay, that is all of, that concludes our old business. Okay, so we'll move on to new business. We have three items on the agenda. So first one is a hearing in the case of Mountain View Bible Church, case number 2021-10. I'm going to ask the applicant and anyone else who may be testifying on behalf of the applicant, if you'd please come forward to the podium. And if you would, before you start presenting your case, if you would please state your, first of all, let me swear you in. If you'd raise your right hand, please. Do you swear, excuse me, let me silence this. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony that you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
If you would both please state your full name, please, and spell it for our court reporter and what your position is or role is.
My name is Anthony Trost.
Turn the microphone.
Okay, my name is Anthony Trost. I'm the director of surveying with Mellum Associates.
Squared away with the microphone there.
I'm Elwood Fonmiller, the pastor of Mountain View Bible Church.
Hold on 1 second.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We're making a technical adjustment here, so
gotcha.
We can hear you properly.
You might have to turn off any mics of anybody that's not talking.
Okay. Elwood Fonmiller, need me to spell the last name? P-F-A-U-N-M-I-L-L-E-R. And I'm pastor of Mountain View Bible Church.
My name is Tony Trost. T-R-O-S-T. And I'm the director of surveying with Melham Associates, M-E-L-H-A-M.
M-E-L-H-A-M?
Yes. Okay. First off, I'm going to hand out something here. Evidently, I failed to include the copies of the existing deeds with the original application. So I have copies of the deeds for everybody.
Thank you.
Okay, Mountain View Bible Church currently owns two adjacent residential properties on Sipe Avenue, 64 and 74 Sipe Avenue. One of the parcels is currently used as a parsonage. And the purpose of this plan is simply they're looking to sell one of these lots, and they want to more equitably distribute the land between the two lots. The reason we are here for zoning or for a variance request is that currently one of the lots meets the zoning ordinance in terms of lot frontage. One of them does not. It's an existing nonconformity. What we're proposing actually makes both lots less than the 100 feet frontage requirement. So it's turning one conforming lot, at least in terms of lot frontage, and one non-conforming lot to two non-conforming lots. Therefore, we need a zoning variance. There are some good things about this survey. There's actually a number of non-conformities with these two lots now, and we're actually reducing four existing non-conformities to three proposed non-conformities, even though we are creating the one additional non-conformity that is one of the three proposed non-conformities. Just to go through the list of them. My apologies.
I have them up on the screen.
Oh, okay,
too.
Okay. That explains it. The dwelling on lot net two now, the parsonage, currently violates the existing setback. Now, it did not violate the setback when the structure was built. It was built before the zoning ordinance was adopted, but currently it is a non-conforming. The shed in the rear of that lot actually straddles the property line. So it not only violates the setback, it actually violates the property line. And the non-conformity existing lot right now does not meet the 100 feet lot width. And that's basically, so this is both a, the shed in the back is both a violation of the property line itself and the building setback. After the proposed subdivision, and it's just a lot add-on, we're not doing any construction or any earth disturbance at all. But both of the lots will be less than the required 100-foot minimum lot width, and the shed will remain in violation of the building setback line, but we're getting rid of the fact that it straddles a property line, and we're also getting rid of the nonconformity regarding the building setback for the parsonage. So again, we're going from four nonconformities to three. And it's just a more equitable distribution of the ground between the two lots. In addition, given the construction of this house, this has nothing to do with ordinances, but there's a large parking area in the rear of the parsonage, which I imagine was used for parking for meetings and such. The only access to this lot actually is up through the church property and down through the rear. The addition of moving, or the another advantage of moving this property line, is it'll allow for a driveway to be built from Sipe Avenue to the rear of this property without going through the church property. That's basically it. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have. Or
we all have your application. You do need to just touch upon briefly the five requirements to issue a variance, and we may have some questions for you then as well. So just maybe one point of clarification on your map before you get started. So the shed you're talking about that will still be non-compliant, is where is that on this?
That shed is right here. If it was a laser pointer.
Yep. On the screen.
Yeah, the shed we're talking about is right here. The existing property line is right here where the...
That's the one that straddles, okay. And then the one on lot one, which is the lower lot, is that correct?
One more time?
Lot one is the lower lot?
Lot one is the lower
okay,
lot.
So that shed is currently within the setback and will obviously remain where it is. It looks like you have another shed there down at the bottom. on the bottom.
On the bottom, yeah, that also was.
So that's no change.
There's no change on that.
Okay.
Yep, there's no change on that one.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, this is the one that, and again, once we move the property line, this is where the property line will be. And you can see it's just more evenly spread between the two lots. It's just logical, but it's still going to be a violation of the setback, which is this dash line, but at least it's going to be on one property rather than both. If you want me to go through the narrative a little bit, the idea that unique physical circumstances or conditions, including irregularity, narrowness, or shallowness of the lot size, that makes it this a particular hardship. Again, the irregularity, I guess, is the just the small distance between the existing house and the existing property line. At the time the house was built, again, there was nothing wrong with that. There is something wrong with that now. And the fact that right now there is. I'm sorry. I think it's on. Okay. And again, the fact that the only access to this parking area in the back now is through the church property and across the rear of this property. That's a strip of ground that's owned by the church, but this would allow for a future construction of a driveway on the south side of this lot. It was not created, again, everything that was built in accordance with the ordinance at the time the structures were built. So, the time that the I don't know that I have the exact year.
The parsonage was, the property was
right.
Ceded to the church, and then so the church owned it when the parsonage was built.
Right. But do you know what year that was?
71. It says it was conveyed in 1971.
Yeah, it was conveyed in 1971, and the parsonage would have been built very shortly after that. I can't tell you exactly when.
So in your opinion, is the primary reason for doing this so that you can get that future, that driveway in the future, is that sort of like a big driver?
The primary reason for doing this is just to equitably distribute the ground. It also goes, again, we're making the existing nonconformities worse. There are four now, we're going to be three. That's not why we're doing it, from a practical standpoint.
Because the future development of the driveway, is that kind of the driver behind this?
And just to give this property a side yard line, which the side lot line, which they don't have right now, or a very small one.
At the front corner, which would be the east side of the parsonage, you currently only have, I think, 12 feet between the property line and the house. The rear corner is 7 feet. So if a fence were constructed on the property number 74, lot one, if a fence were constructed there, it would be very uncomfortable to the residents there at 64.
Okay, in terms of whether we can do this project without violating the ordinance, quite simply we can't. The total frontage for both lots is 186 feet. Obviously, you can't get two lots of 100 feet out of 186 feet. So, that the such hardship has not been created by the applicant. Again, when these houses were built, they were built in compliance with the ordinances that existed at the time. So these nonconformities were created when the ordinance was adopted. So that is not a hardship that was created by the client. Will the variance, if authorized, not alter the existing essential character of the neighborhood or district in which the property is located? I'd actually argue this is going to make it a little bit better for a residential neighborhood, that each lot gets an adequate side yard. It's certainly not going to change. Again, we're not doing any construction or any earth disturbance. It's just relocating a property line. That the variance if authorized will represent the minimum variance that will afford relief and represent the least modification possible of the regulation at issue. And we are not requesting here a large variance, at least in my opinion.
Again, the required frontage is by ordinance is 100 feet. Microphone.
Do you want to hold it?
Sorry, I just wanted to read some numbers off the plan here. The required frontage is 100 feet. One lot, as we have it proposed, will be about 93 feet, 92.97. And one lot will be 93.41. So we're actually requesting a waiver of roughly 7.5 feet. Or 8 feet on one lot.
So the part of this question, how it's driving this event, you're trying to sell your lower lot, which is lot one, is that correct?
Yes.
That's correct. Yeah, and prior to selling that lot, they just want to, again, they want to move this lot line to here so that, you know, this, they have to do that before they sell the lot or they're not going to be able to do it. I think there's a power pole located right here. I think
it's right there on the screen. Look at it on the screen.
Okay. Well, that's the power pole. I think the proposed property line is going to be about here. So this power pole will be on the frontage of the parsonage, but I don't see any reason that would create a problem with what we're attempting to do. On this plan, that power pole would be right about here. It's currently on the frontage of lot one, and if this is approved, it will be in the frontage of lot two.
Sorry. I don't want to be yelled at again. Why not put both properties together?
Again, they're looking to sell one of them.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, folks.
Thank you.
Next case, the hearing in the case of Paul Turner, case number 2021-11.
I do. Sure. My name is Paul Furness, property owner at 125 Robin Road. That's F-U-R-N-I-S-S.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, the heart of it is in the five questions that are being asked there. First of all, what circumstances about the property? If you take a look at the property, it's incredibly unique to the Hershey area and to the developments. It was built in 1964 along with the other homes within a 2 to 3 year period. It has an exposed backyard, side yards, and front yard, as well as surrounded with street. The reason even for wanting the shed in the first place is I have a real desire to enhance the property and make it attractive like the other homes that are around there rather than leaving things out. I don't have a backyard with a fence or anything that I can lean stuff against or whatever. The benefit of having a shed would not only open up our garage with what's stored in there, lawnmowers, snowblowers, ladders, and things like that, but and this is a modest size shed. I'm the kind of guy that would love to have a 14 by 20, but 8 by 10 is going to be it. So the best place to put it is on that north side. And I've spoken with the neighbors that are around there. None of them have expressed any concern or problem with me. They're glad for what we've done with the property. I moved in June. We've cleaned it up. Landscaped a good bit of it, and we're hoping to do that some more. The hardship obviously wasn't created by me. It was created, you know, in the nature of the neighborhood. They had that piece of property. They built a home on it, which they probably wouldn't do this in this day and age. But they did it then. The variance really wouldn't affect the neighborhood that much. I think it would really enhance the curb appeal of the properties around it. As long as this property is looking nice, the properties that are facing it are going to benefit from it as well. There's a number of things because of the age of the neighborhood where the zoning ordinances aren't in compliance. Right across the street, for example, there's two garages that have been added on, and there's about 14 and a half feet between the two homes. But that said, I'm looking for a modest alleviation of the zoning. I can meet the front face back from that part of Robin Road, but I can't meet any other side or setback requirements because it's all considered frontage with the interpretation of the zoning laws. I am planning on a movable shed. Fortunately, when they put the natural gas in this spring, they located all the lines there, so it's not being built on any sewer lines or water lines. It is potentially movable. I'd like to put it on a gravel pad, but that's the heart of it.
Yes, I think the drawing we had only showed the house and the size of placing the shed.
No, and there's a large maple tree in the one place there that with low branches, it would take a lot of cutting to make that happen. There's nothing on that side now. The blue spruce died that's there, and we had it removed this spring. So there's nothing on that side. And you can see where previous owners had kept stuff out to the side. That kind of thing. That's what we're looking to avoid. Right now, we've got nothing there but landscaping. We put in some azalea bushes and some other things.
You mentioned landscaping in your application.
Yes. Just to place a small bushes around it, just to make it look attractive, just some arborvitae, maybe azalea bushes, just something to make it look finished. That's the side that we're looking at right there with the tree missing.
Further, but any issues with sight lines or anything like that?
No, sight lines are good.
I have just one question. So it will be 14 feet from the curb. It looks like via Google Earth that there's a fire hydrant a couple feet inside of the property line.
Yes, the fire
hydrant. So it will only, how many feet will it be then from the fire hydrant?
Let's come down the street view. There you can just start to see it. The fire hydrants, I believe there's 21 feet to the curb. So if that fire hydrant's about 4 feet in, it would probably be about 19 feet, about 17 feet.
Do you know where the property line is versus the curb line?
I believe the standard is, I don't know what the standard is here. Where I came from in New York, it was 24 feet from the center line of the road, but I cannot tell you personally what it is here. I know this much, that when they put the natural gas line around the line, they went in 4 feet on the property, assuming that that was all part of the easement. So.
Do you maintain up to the curb?
Yes.
David, would you comment on that?
Because
I want to make sure we have the right, we're considering the right amount of relief.
Yes.
Typically, it's either the property line or the
right away.
Street right away line, whichever is closer.
Yes. So Robin Road has a street right away of 40 feet, and the pavement from curb to curb measures 30 feet, so the right-of-way extends 5 feet into the property. So it would be measured 20 feet from the center line each direction.
So we're really talking about about 9 feet then?
So we're really talking about like 9 feet then, the 14 foot dimension being 9 foot to the property line, rough, essentially?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Just add the 5 feet, you know.
Right.
Right. Okay, any other questions?
And that 14 feet and 21 or 22 feet is my hard measurement with a tape measure. It's not a survey to the curb that exists there. And I wanted to leave 6 feet between the house and the shed for just to maintain whatever's in there. I don't want to stick anything in there, but I want to.
Right. Okay. And as far as orienting, I realize your dimension is only, you know, 8 versus 10 isn't much different, but did you consider turning it at all or shifting it?
The only problem with turning it is in the drainage is going into the house, unless I do something gutter-wise or whatever. That was just the
reason.
And also, I felt it would look better if it was facing the direction of the house with the door out front. It was a matter of aesthetics.
Okay. Okay, great. Just, yep. All right. Sounds like we don't have any other questions. So again, the board has 45 days to render a decision, and you have 30 days to appeal if you're aggrieved by that decision.
I just have two quick questions. If you approve it, how long do I have to make this happen now that we're heading into winter? And
typically, as you may have heard in the decisions we read earlier, typically it's a year.
Okay, great. Okay, super. All right, thank you. Appreciate the willingness for you to hear me. And
so. It is getting close to Halloween.
Yeah, I'm a retired minister, so maybe it's a. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you, Janelle. Our next agenda item, hearing in the case of Thaddeus Steger, case 2021-12. My understanding is that they have requested a continuance. Is that all right?
Yes, he emailed this morning requesting a continuance. There was
a miscommunication between him and the builder about who would be presenting. So he found out Monday, and he just thought the extra time to prepare himself would be appropriate before coming here without all the answers.
Okay, so as far as you understand, the materials that we have are still...
The material, they may be supplemented with a new narrative from him himself. That way it's in his words and he can better understand what is being presented to him.
Okay, so I think we need a motion then to grant the continuance.
So moved.
Thank you, Dean. Thank you, Sandy, for seconding. Any discussion? Hearing? Yep. Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, so that motion's granted. Okay, we have one other item of business. I hope everyone had a chance to look at the last month.
Would anyone like a paper copy of the...
That'd be useful if you have it, David. Yes, thank you. Mike, I know you weren't here, Mike, but the last meeting, we passed a motion that I would work with staff and legal counsel to look at some amendments to our application, try to make things a little bit clearer, differences between...
Oh, we have two. Okay, good. Works.
Oh, okay. You know, some of the differences between requirement differences between variances and special exceptions and so on. So kind of with that in mind, we took a crack at this. Certainly today the intent is to have some discussion in public. And if the board is so inclined to make a motion to adopt this, or, you know, the other option is to make some further revisions or adjustments to it, and either adopt it with revisions or we can go back and work with staff further and come back at a later date. So I'll open it up to questions and comments from the board members. And I want to thank staff, Janelle, David, Chuck, and anyone else who was part of the editing of this, as well as Megan for a lot of good work and a number of back and forth to get this to the stage it's at. So hopefully it's close to what you all find useful.
Steve, can you just give a summary of what the changes are?
The biggest thing and the most significant thing is that we're responsible for really four different groups of things. If you look at this administration section of the ordinance in terms of our jurisdiction, variances are probably the most frequent thing that we're handling, right? But there's different requirements to grant a variance versus a special exception for use, and even special exception for non-use matters. And then there's a bunch of other things that we rarely come before us, but they do occasionally. I think we had one, I think it was last year, where someone was contesting a notice of violation from the zoning officer. So it's either an appeal or a challenge of something, either action of the zoning officer or something in the zoning ordinance that can be brought to the board. So right from the start, I thought it'd be useful if we made it clear to the applicant, or kind of forced them to be clear about what they're asking for and which of those criteria apply. And then the idea was to have the first section of the application, which we're calling Section A, be something that everyone fills in, which is things like, you know, your name, the location of the lot, and so on. And then to be able to go right to the appropriate section that applies for variances and only that, or to go right to the section for special exception for use. And therefore, what we were getting a lot, as I was kind of looking back at some of the prior applications we've had here in the last 2 years, is we were getting people who were using the variance criteria when they were applying for a special exception. And it was causing confusion, and then we were having to, often with deans, redirect, trying to walk people through the you know, the right criteria. So I thought, you know, this would at least hopefully then make it easier and more obvious that, oh, I need to do Section A and Section C because I'm looking for a special exception based on use, and as well as incorporate more check boxes as far as which section are you asking for a special exception, especially on the special exceptions from. And then from there, you know, we also made some wording changes, just things that I didn't think were clear or staff didn't think were clear, things that Megan then caught as well that, hey, yeah, we missed something here, we should change this wording a little bit. So we tweaked the wording on some of the questions to prompt people. But really that structure was more the big thing that we took a different angle at. So the idea would be that everyone would fill out the first two pages. And then in some cases, you're just filling out one page after that. In some cases, you're filling out a couple pages after that.
Steve, that last, on page 5, the last point where it says, explain how the proposed special exception use authorized meets all other requirements of the zoning ordinance, including the specific criteria listed. Was that how it used to read? Was there any change to that?
No. Well, in fact, what you see here on page 5, we didn't even have in the application.
Right.
It wasn't even there.
Okay.
And that's where we were getting a lot of confusion, where people were coming in for a special exception or answering the questions for a variance,
yeah,
and not the questions for a special exception. So when you have a special exception for use,
they were basically guided by David and Chuck when they,
yeah, or they gave us a narrative, or
they said they need to, you need to discuss the following points. Is that
right?
So you just
right
lay them all out.
Exactly. So for all of the boxes at the top of page 5, which are all of the different types of uses, including substitution of nonconforming uses, we had a couple of those recently. All of those use special exceptions have the first three questions apply to all of those. Okay? The fourth question applies to all of them, but the points are different. And to try to list the points for each of the, whatever, dozen or so types of uses would have just made this form crazy. So rather than doing that, you know, we said, hey, you know, that last question is to address all of the individual points for, let's say it's for a guest lodging, dining, and conference facility, okay, just for example. There are some specific items in that section 502.5 in addition to the general criteria for the special exception for use. So they would address how they're meeting those items in this last section.
So that's what that is. See, I didn't even know.
That's
what that refers to, this specific criteria.
Right, and staff is still going to need to provide some guidance, mm-hmm, but at least it gives a place for them to address those specific items,
yeah,
as opposed to just putting it in a narrative somewhere, yeah, and it kind of gets lost.
I think it's great.
And we're searching for, you know, right, whether they've met the requirements or not.
Yeah, I knew the first three, but I didn't recognize the fourth one and how it ties back to these individuals. Use or whatever it is.
Right. So if you go to section 225.502, right, that's where it talks about special exceptions for use. Following that, you have 502.1, 2, 3, all the way through to 502.12, which are all different types of uses you can ask for a special exception for. And some of those only apply in certain districts, certain zoning districts. Okay, and then you have 502.12 talks about non-conforming, reestablishing a discontinued non-conforming use, which is actually then also talked about further in 601B, and that's why we also have the 601B, 602, 603, 604 in here, because those have to do with non-conforming uses, whether you're reestablishing it, substituting it, restoring something that's been destroyed at you're restoring, but you're not restoring it in the time frame required. So those are all relative to use, and they all have the same requirements.
That's great.
I think it looks great.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for
doing all this work.
Yeah.
One of the suggestions that was made is we put the I have read and understand this section,
yes,
on pages 4 and 6, because then it gives you the power to hold them responsible, applicants responsible too. You hear your initials, you said you read and understand, and it just, it's a tool to help you guys.
We're trying to prompt them through with questions, but we also wanted to have read the ordinance to make sure that, you know.
Like when you check the box online, I read all these.
They still may not read it, but, you know, it at least sort of prompts, you know.
I do think we need to give Sandy some props, like with the whole variance thing, because of everybody, I think, including when I was on the board before. You always hold people responsible for what the criteria are, and I mean, that's a good, it helps keep things, you know, directionally correct, and keep, you know, people not getting too sidetracked. And so I think it's, now that we actually have it on the application, I think it's outstanding, so.
Yeah, and we kept the last two sections. Kept the last two sections, D and E, we kept them very simple, one page, because, you know, the matters that fall into the special exceptions that are non-use related, there's five of them, which was a good catch by staff, because I didn't even flag those. They're kind of buried in other sections of the ordinance.
Right.
But those don't have the same criteria that's in 502, because they're not related to use.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and I think that's also where we've had some confusion as we've been evaluating some of these in the past. So those, you know, pretty much, you know, someone's going to either, if it's simple, they're going to put it in this space here. If it's more complicated, they're going to say, see the narrative, and they're going to give us a narrative. Yeah. And likewise with the last section on challenges and appeals, those could be, you know, almost anything within the scope. So we didn't want to try to prompt them for too much there. Just give them, tell us which thing you're challenging and then give us a narrative.
Is there any benefit for including a section on here where they would list who will be presenting? So that, like, in the situation of tonight where the builder and the property owner didn't know, you know, who was doing that, just so that, I don't know if that saves a step for staff.
Can we even
even if it was anticipated. Right.
Before that, but if somebody else shows up.
Right. Like, even if it's just something like anticipated, like, of whether or not, I know there's verbiage in here now about you may want to consult an attorney, but then there's at least a heads up based on the supporting documentation if it's going to be some type of professional versus a, individual.
Well, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we could try to incorporate that in here.
Not that they'd be bound to it. I think it just helps to prepare.
Or even if it's not a part of the application, I think it's just be part of the process
to get this
passed. Because I know that you prepare differently if it's going to be a homeowner versus an attorney or a developer or something like that.
So. Or like in the situation of last time, I didn't realize until we got here that one of the people presenting and testifying, you know, presented what I felt could be a perceived conflict of interest just because of a personal relationship. So having known or had, you know, a possibility for heads up before that, I think would just allow everyone to be better prepared.
Another technical question here. Do we need to swear in attorneys? I don't think we do we? That was always the protocol in the past. If it's an attorney presenting, they don't have to raise their right hand and be sworn in.
It depends if they're making an argument or
I think we've had attorneys who have basically walked their applicant through the testimony with kind of prompting questions. And in that case, we wouldn't.
We wouldn't, or if they're just making an argument at the end, but there are some attorneys who are actually providing testimony and they should be sworn in.
Like if you own if you happen to be a lawyer, but you owned Rick Russell's restaurant thing.
Or if you were here providing the testimony on behalf of your client as essentially as their agent, right?
Yeah, we've had a lot of attorneys show up and at least give the background information so as to kind of move the hearing forward. They're giving testimony and they should be sworn in.
Okay. I swear in the past we never If it was an attorney, no matter what, they didn't get sworn in.
You may not. I mean, there are officers at the court, but I think it's a good practice to have them sworn in if they're going to be offering testimony.
I remember we had somebody get so offended when we asked him to be sworn in. He was an attorney. So, I'm an attorney. And after that, we're like, oh, geez, you don't need to swear.
We're on the record, so I won't say what I think of that.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, I think at least in the last 2 years, you know, that I've been here, we had a couple of cases, I think, where the attorney was simply prompting the applicant who was providing the testimony and wasn't providing the testimony himself or herself.
Yeah, we did some providing.
Yeah, we've had some attorneys who do a brief opening and then ask their witnesses the questions to solicit the testimony. And in those cases, they're acting more as the attorney rather than the witness.
We can address that on a case.
I think so, too.
I think really it just comes down to, will you be presenting testimony or will you be
presenting testimony? And we can ask that question if there's an objection or
To be respectful of the profession.
Right. Yeah.
And if they get out of line, I will arrest them.
Okay. A lot of years of school and study to get
Good.
A lot of those letters. So,
any other suggestions or comments or questions?
I think this is
so. So are we? Is what I'm hearing that we want to incorporate, add something in here as to who's expected to present, or is that something we just want staff
I believe it should be more informal that staff provide us that information in advance. It doesn't need to be a part of the application.
Are you okay with that, Lindsay?
Yeah, I'm fine with that. Yeah. Whatever. I only suggested in case it was easier.
Right. It is helpful, though, I think, especially like in the case like where you were saying, one of us could have a conflict.
Yeah, no, I don't care.
Okay. So if you're all happy with this, can I ask someone to make a motion to adopt this going forward? Now, of course, it wouldn't apply to folks that have already applied for next meeting, but...
I move that we adopt this new application.
Second.
Further discussion? No? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, that motion carries.
Thanks again.
Okay, thanks again to staff and to Megan for some great work there. So I'll ask for a motion to adjourn to executive session to deliberate on tonight's hearings.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, we're adjourned.
Yes.
So do we want to just sit here or do you?
Yeah, it would help if your microphone was on.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
I know.